Right. Everyone ready? 3, 2, 1. Yeah. Welcome, dear listeners. This is episode 131 of the Dev and Dice podcast. In this podcast, we are doing a topic tapas number 3 on this series. I am your host of the podcast, Joel. Joining me, we have Nick, the Spiel des Jahres Annus Extraordinaire.
Hello, folks.
And we have Sam putting the yo back in polyomino. Now, yeah.
Polyomino.
Hopefully, that will make sense if I get the UK Games Expo podcast out.
Yeah.
If I don't, it's not going to make sense at all. So I'm hoping between these two podcasts that we just recorded, I am going to get the other one out. But we'll see. Let's see how it all goes. So yeah, welcome back, guys. This is our topic podcast. And we've got some outstanding topics to talk about. Yeah, I'm excited.
Cool.
Right, topic number one, basic played games. We're just going to add in some a couple of played games that we've had chance to play over the last few weeks. Nice. And the first one, I was actually hoping Claire was going to be here, but she's fallen asleep again. Shit, I'm destroying the place. Basically, at the 24-hour board gaming marathon event that I went to, in the raffle, I won a game. And it's called Pioneer Rails. And it was a Kickstarter game, and I got the Kickstarter version, and it is a flip 'em right. It's right next to me. I'm just dragging it out under all the clutter I've got here on the table. By Matthew Dunstan and Jeffrey D. Adlers, and it's by Drunder Games. I couldn't see through the logo. So yeah, it's a flip and right beast around a western, building the rail network in the Wild West. And what you're doing is actually quite cool. You have a stack of a set of cards, basically like your standard kind of playing cards, but there are only tens to aces, and the four suits. And someone becomes a dealer, and they pull out three cards from this deck. They will pick one card, and that's the card they will be using. And whoever else is playing, so it's mainly me and Claire, you get to pick from the two that are remaining. So if there's lots of you playing, you basically all get to pick from the two cards remaining, but you can all pick the same card.
Yeah, just pick any of those.
Yeah. But the dealer gets to pick the one card they want to use. And the card does two things. The suit gets added into a row of boxes at the bottom of the sheet. And you're trying to make up poker hands with these cards. So pairs, two pairs, three of a kind, a full house, a straight, or four of a kind. And depending, after five rounds of doing this, what you've been able to acquire is points. So if you get like three of a kind, it gets you 3 points. If you get a straight, it gets you 5 points. And if you get four of a kind, it's 6 points. It's just quite simple. And you're doing this over four rounds. So you're going to have basically 20 turns to there. Then also with the card, you get to draw three rail tracks onto this hex map, and you draw it from the station of the suit. So the four stations are on the map, and you're drawing lines along the outer rims of the hexes, and you're trying to get lines or rail tracks around buildings that are on the map to activate them. So like the mines just need one track around it, and you get to cross off a nugget, gold nugget. the casinos or the saloons need two tracks drawn around it. As soon as you do that, you can actually circle a two-time symbol next to your poker hands, and at the end of the round, whatever you score doubles, which is quite cool. And there's other things. There's rails. I can't think what they're called. Like railway companies or stations. I can't think what they are now. But they double your network worth on your tracks. There's forts. If you build four tracks around a fort, they score you lots of money. The hardest thing to determine is cattle. You've got to basically split the cattle up from everything else. And once you say this cattle hex is on its own, you basically circle its number. The more you circle, the bigger the points. But it's trying to determine whether it's been split from the rest of it, from your tracks. That's quite hard to get hold of. But it's actually quite enjoyed it. It is a standard kind of flip and write, but with the rail drawing and the poker hand making really adds a good level of strategy to it. You got gold cards as well. That there's a communal set of gold cards of trying to gain so many nuggets, gold nuggets on it, or activate free casinos. So you've got those to work towards. That's the standard map. And because I've got the Kickstarter version from the raffle, it came with another map set, which has some different rule sets to it and some bonus cards where like they change the rules up, and there's a couple of Joker cards that you can add in, which are basically the designers being added in. I actually quite enjoyed it. It felt like, as soon as I got it, I was like, oh, this is similar to Welcome 2, cool. But it actually changes up with the poker hands and the things like that. Claire really enjoyed it. She kept on that saying, I took it away with us and played it there. She was like, oh, shall we play another game of this tonight? I was like, yeah, that's fine. I'll play this. So she kept on beating me.
That's so cool.
We won't get into that. And I actually quite do it. It's definitely a stayer.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I'm going to have to laminate a load of the sheets.
This is when I was... Yeah, you need to color that or you run out. Yeah, I saw this first at the expo last year, and it looked really interesting then, because I love the idea of having the deck of cards where you're trying to make poker hands as well as using those to draw them up. And this did win the Games Expo this year. It won the best card game.
It did, didn't it?
Winner category. So good. Glad you enjoyed that one.
Definitely. Yeah. Quite a surprise, really. So, what have you been playing, Sam?
So, just yesterday, I played one of the games I bought in UK Games Expo, which is Darwin's Journey, which I think came out last year, I believe. Last year. And it's designed by Simone Gianni and Nestore Mangoni. I don't know if I pronounced those names right. They're most famous for Zulkin, the Mayan calendar, amongst many, many other kind of heavier Euros. This one is all about the journey that Darwin made through the Galapagos Islands. And in this instance, you're sort of all tailing along behind him, trying to sort of like play catch up to the Beagle, using worker placement. And we've played a couple of games on BGA recently as well, just to kind of get a feel for it. And I managed to play a game in person once I'd sort of got a feel for it on BGA. And I'm glad to say I really enjoy it. It's really good. I in one of my games on BGA, I managed to... I'm just going to dig up the history now so that you guys can all laugh at it. The winning score was 274 points, and I scored 43. Nice. So I clearly didn't understand something about that game. I need to put that right. And it's the interesting thing is, it is literally just a worker placement game. You get a bunch of workers and you place them out on various spaces that can do different things like you would in any worker placement game. Mm. But there's obviously many layers to that, depending on the type of thing you want to do. So you might send a worker to send an explorer exploring the islands to find specimens for you. Or it might be your ship, which needs to follow along behind the Beagle to make sure it doesn't get left behind and explore more islands of the Galapagos. Or you might need to send letters back to the UK or wherever, your science institute. Or you might need to deliver specimens to the museum, or you might need to do a variety of other things. And the thing, a key bit I missed out in that first game I played, was that in order to do those things, your workers need to have the right seals. There's a set of four different coloured seals, which are assigned to the four different main actions, which is explore, ship, ship movement, letters, and seals. And what you can do is they all start with one colour, one seal, based on some crew cards that you draft at the very start of the game. And so, so for instance, if you want to move ships as a thing, you need to have blue seals. If you want to explore, it needs to be green seals, that kind of stuff. And you can add seals to workers. And I completely missed that as a thing, which is why I couldn't do anything in the game, because my workers never actually take actions.
Right.
That I needed. I was like, why can't I do a thing with this? I don't understand. Mm. And it was in the game with you guys that I kind of, it twigged with me. I was like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah.
It was too late for me in the other game. But one of the actions is you can go get seals, and you can get a seal or pay for a seal, depending on where it is in this track. And you can add, say, a blue seal to one of your workers, so that it's either got two blue seals or a blue and a red or whatever. And that allows that one worker to then go to one of the spaces that requires those colours. And as the game progresses, you'll need more and more of those. And if you want to unlock abilities on a crew card, it would need four or five different seals to be able to take its power and that kind of stuff. Without getting bogged down in all the details, it's one of those clever kind of designs that it feels over... You know, you feel a bit overawed when you're starting, going, crikey, there's a lot of things to look at here, lots of icons and stuff. But actually, once you've done it a couple of times, you're like, okay, this all makes sense now. And it is a really, really nice game. It's not significantly heavy. I kind of feel like I got the same... I was sort of describing it in the week by saying it kind of feels like Ark Nova did to me. Not mechanically, but in terms of the depth level of... I felt like Ark Nova was too complicated and too heavy, and I didn't want to touch it.
Mm.
But once I played it, I was just like, oh, okay, this all makes sense now. And this is the same sort of thing. It feels like there's a ton going on, and I don't understand it. Quite scary looking. But as soon as you kind of play a couple of rounds, you're like, okay, I understand it now. And it's actually significantly simpler than you think it is. There's a lot of moving parts, but it is quite straightforward. You just got to keep your eye on a lot of things, that's all. So that's kind of what I meant by that. But yeah, it's really good. It's really nice. Similarly to my complaint about River of Gold in the last episode about the insert, this one doesn't have an insert, but it also has a very narrow box. It's like Ticket to Ride square, but it's not deep. It's quite shallow. And I'm like, so a bit like River of Gold, I can't quite fit everything in how I want to nicely. It's got to all kind of cram it in around little nooks and crannies and try squish everything in. So just make it a normal size box, guys. It's a square box, the same as all other square boxes. Make it Ticket to Ride size, proper depth. There's plenty of room. No one's asking for shallow boxes. They're asking for not silly shaped boxes. So it's just really irritating.
Oh,
but also, it's like for there's bound to be expansions at some stage. If I want to have one of those, I'm one of those people that likes to put everything in the base box. There's definitely not room in the base box for it. Anyway, point is, it's a really, really nice game. Really happy with it. Going to be keeping hold of that for quite a little while.
Hmm.
Yeah, look, it was a good one. I enjoyed our play of that.
Mm. Or, as it turns out, there is a expansion coming next year. So, yeah.
Yes, I saw that announced as well. Yeah. Good stuff. So, I have been playing some games of Terraforming Mars, which may not sound like new news, but this is with the latest stuff that's come on the latest Kickstarter, the Prelude 2, with the custom milestones and awards and all the fan maps printed on nice neoprene mats. So we took a couple of the maps for a spin, just at two player, which were a lot of fun. The Vestitis Borealis map was nice. I played that with Ian in the group, and we shoved him the Prelude 2 stuff. That was a fun tweak to the map. And then my son really wanted to play it because he saw all the nice expansion stuff. He wanted to play the most. And so he decided he wanted to play with the biggest map possible. So we played on the Amazonas Planitia map, which is meant for 4 to 5 players. And we played it 2-player. It technically works at 2-player. Mechanically, it works. But it extends the game far too long. We ended up with so many of the blue cards, which give you ongoing abilities, it was impossible to keep track of what everyone, all the powers were. And I was kind of half having to keep track of what he had, because he hasn't played before. And that was, it was very interesting to try on that map. I think it'd be great at 4 players. It would probably be nice at 3, actually, on that big map. Play quite nicely and not too long. 5 players, if you like Terraforming Mars a lot and you like very long games, then I'm sure that would be lovely. But I don't think I'd want to play at 5 player on that size of map. It would just take far too long. But it was fun to try out the larger map on that. The custom milestones awards are nice. We got to just switch out milestones and awards for ones that we actually, you know, worked for us in the player count. And the new stuff that Prelude 2 adds was fun tweaks. Some new corps as well, new corporations. The other bit that it adds in, it adds Prelude cards specific to some of the expansions rather than just base stuff. And we didn't play with any of the other expansions, but it was it's nice to have that option. So that was good. Yeah, that was nice to get to play those. I'm sure Lewis is listening along, going, "Oh, that blooming Terraforming Mars! How can you possibly play that still?" He'll be asking, "Does it fix everything?" No, it doesn't fix anything. For you, Lewis, it's all still broken. But it was a lot of fun to play those.
Still be broken even if it was fixed for him.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
So yeah. So topic number 2. This has come up. It's probably come up a few times that we've mentioned over the podcasts, but just recently, and we will discuss it later on as well. Is the reason I brought this subject in because it was quite interesting. Playing the Clank digital version on Steam taught me a rule I've been misunderstanding, let's say, for a very long time, and
yeah.
So, topic number 2 is basic rules we've been playing incorrectly for ages before we found out the correct one. So, yeah, so mine is Clank, and it's to do with the Crystal Caves. And I always presumed you enter the Crystal Cave, you stop moving. But if you found a way to, like, get out the Crystal Cave on the same turn, you can continue moving. And so there was quite a few instances, and one with our Lewis, where he got into a Crystal Cave and he said, "Oh, well, if I teleport out, then I can continue moving." I was like, "Yeah, that's basically it." And he was like, "All right." So then he teleported out, and he had so much movement left that he actually got out of the dungeon in the same turn. And I was playing the Crystal Digital, I was playing the Clank digital version and pretty much trying to do exactly what he did, but the computer said no. And I was just like, "Well, hold on a minute, I've got the movement, I can teleport out of this crystal, the last crystal cave that's there, I can teleport out, I've got plenty of movement, I'll just get out the same." And teleported out, and I was like, "Why can't I move?" Because it would highlight rooms that you had, if you had movement to get to on there, and I was like, "Why are you not letting me move? Okay, undo it, go back, see what happens." And then I try and do it again. I was like, "There's a bug here or something." And I actually honestly thought it was a bug until I started looking it up, and you can hover over the actions and it actually says you are exhausted. You cannot continue moving. Even if you can get out of it, you are exhausted. I was like, "Oh..." Is this an actual rule? And I actually dug out my old copy. I've got like the original Clank box, like first printing kind of thing box, and like reading through the rule, and it says it there. And I was like, "Oh, all those times I've let Lewis get away with that. What an asshole."
Yeah.
I've probably done it myself as well, but so yeah, it was just one of those. It's like, I just never thought to really read into the rules. Once you think you know it kind of thing. And I mean, I know for myself, listening to Tom Vassell, he played No Thanks wrong for years, until he actually played it with his co-host. And it was like, that's not how you play it.
Yeah.
And he's like, yes, it is. He's like, no, you do it like this. He was like, oh. So, yeah. So that's my version. Nick's had to dig one out because apparently he doesn't get rules wrong. And
yeah, I'm a stickler for rules, so I don't tend to get them wrong long. So I've borrowed this one from Arthur and Chris from the game group, which he brings up when we discuss this kind of thing. For the longest time, he was playing Century Spice Road, where the cards that give you exchanges when you play them, he was playing and teaching that you just get that exchange once. It's a one-off thing. But the actual rule is you can do that exchange as many times as you can afford to do it, which quite significantly changes the power of those cards and the importance of getting them and drafting them. So that was his one. It does make quite a difference to the game. It does in some ways speed it up if you can get enough of those cards into your deck. It really helps you get those conversions to grab the points cards quicker. So yeah, that was Chris's one that I borrowed.
Now, I actually thought the rule you're getting wrong, that you're just stealing stuff from Chris, because that's what you wrote on.
The rule is you need someone called Chris and then you can steal from him. It's the rule that you were doing wrong.
You mean I can't just do that on every game? No. Oh, dang it.
Oh, dear.
Let's say reword that.
I think we've all heard of Sam's, but he's going to tell it again because it is a classic
very
one.
Very briefly. Yeah. I mean, it is a rule that has basically killed the game for me, because it's one I don't look forward to playing now since learning how to play it properly. And in Jamaica, and it's Joel that taught me the correct
Sorry.
Rule. And it's ruined it for me, but it's the cost in provisions when you come to anchor in Jamaica. And when we first played it, we didn't understand that actually because you play two cards, a movement during the day and a movement during the night. We thought, well, when you come to anchor, that's like night time, you anchor up at night, so that's when you pay the provisions for the space you finish on. So we would do two movements, then pay the provisions, and it turns out you're meant to move, pay provisions, move again, pay provisions again. So that changed the game quite substantially. And actually, I don't think for the better. So it's almost a house rule for us now that we just say, yeah, you pay provisions once, but I've not actually played it again since to see how I feel about it at all now. So it's a bit disappointing, but Jamaica was one of my favourites, and now it's been unplayed for about 6 years.
Oh, wow. Sorry.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah. Not your fault. It's Bruno Cathala's fault for writing a shit rule. So, anyway.
Wow. You got to say that the original rule book was terrible anyway, because it's a big pull-out map, isn't it? So it's just like holding it up, trying to find where the right rule is kind of thing. But
yeah. But we just misunderstood. It was like, obviously we saw the rule that, oh, you pay the provisions, but we just misunderstood that you pay up both parts of the movement, not just at the end. So it was almost like, thematically it made more sense that in my mind, that you pay when you're okay, it's night time, we don't move at night, so therefore we moor up and we do the provisions bit. So it's almost like you move, then you move again. Because some of the moves is like you just go back. It was almost like in thematically you're sort of going, well, if it's one move back but four moves forward, it's almost like you're tacking one back so that you can get the bonus movement forwards afterwards or whatever. I don't know, thinking about how you sail, effectively the sailing mechanic. And it didn't make sense that you'd provision twice, really, in my mind. But anyway, such as it is, that's the rule that we always get wrong. Or did.
Yeah.
Yep.
And in the spirit of trying to get some audience participation, I put the question out on Discord early today. So hopefully next question will have a bit more time.
About 2 hours before we recorded. So the fact we got any responses was quite good.
Yeah. Well, actually, when I discovered the rule about Clank, I put it on a Discord in our Clank forum section, saying, "Oh, I've just discovered this rule." And Board Game Jimmy actually wrote in this rule he got wrong for a bit playing Terraforming Mars, where he said that they only thought they got two actions per generation. And he said it was about six games in until someone pointed out, no, you get as many actions until everyone passes. so yeah, that was probably a very long game they were playing.
Yeah, wow.
So yeah, so in the future, I will put the question out a lot sooner and hopefully have more participation with the Discord. So if you do want to join in and be part of the podcast, then join the Discord and then find the section where we podcast questions or something like that. I can't remember what I named it now, but it'll come up. You'll find it. Hi, Joe in the editing booth, and we had a latecomer to the question of the podcast, which was Craig David, 1987. He said that they played Vieira Card Kingdoms. They played it wrong for the first three times. The game ends when X number of drafting piles are empty, or all the monsters or all the dominions are gone. They missed the first part of that. So the game was very, very long, and they had stupid amounts of resources. The game is now much quicker and tighter, now they're using the proper rules. When you pop along. So yeah, hopefully more participation in the future with our questions. Topic number three is basically me, again, talking about my holiday. Yeah, you're all going to be sick about me talking about my holiday.
You wait till I come back from Japan.
Yeah. So I go to Cyprus quite a lot because technically I've got an apartment out there, but no, it belongs to the in-laws, but I like to say I got an apartment out there.
yeah.
So now it becomes a bit of a challenge of how many games I can fit into the luggage to take out with me. And I was just trying to count up, and I think about took about 10 games. A lot of them were small ones. Mandalorian was the biggest one that I took out there with me. But yeah, it's just trying to compact them all down into a nice small hold. And yeah, played about two of them. So it wasn't worth the stress and energy. But all going right back, I mean, our first trip to Cyprus was even before I was big into board games. And I remember taking casino chips and playing cards because I thought we were just placing cards in that while we're out there. Because it was in this metal case, I put it in a big suitcase, put it through the airport. Oh. Then I get my name called out on the internet over the speaker thing. I go back there and say, "You need to open this case." I was like, "Why? What's wrong?" Because there's something weird showing up in it. So I opened it up, and there's the metal case with the the poker chips, and because they're all in a line, stacked up. And then it's got the playing cards in the middle. They thought it was some kind of battery-operated device, basically a bomb. I was like, so I had to prove to him it was all poker chips. And I was like, yeah, I didn't really think about that. But anyway, and then we also picked up Uno from the shop that was there. And that's pretty much what we played the whole time we were there, was just Uno. Bear in mind, this was before I even got into board games seriously.
Yeah.
So then the next trips out there, we're playing things like No Thanks, Deep Sea Adventure, things like that. They went down well. And then I've even got out a copy, took it with me, left it out there, of Ticket to Ride. So yeah.
Oh.
That's out there. No. With the expansion. And so yeah, that's out there.
Wow.
Didn't even touch that. They've got a copy of Monopoly Revolution, which the kids insisted on playing one time we went out there. And it was funny because I think I was the last person standing because everyone got bored and said, "This is crap." And I was like, Well, you lot wanted to play it. I'm having the best fun here.
Yeah.
The best bit was on it, because it had one of those electronic money transferring devices on it. So all the money was kept on the cards. Yeah. Once you transfer money, it might give you an event and things might happen. That was about the coolest bit about it. But the rest of it was just crap Monopoly again. But that's not been touched since, which I'm quite happy about. But like I said now, my kids do not play games anymore with me. So unless it's new phone, who's this? And even now, I think they got bored of it. So that's kind of my little tales of going there and trying to take board games. But I know Sam, your missus, hates board games with a passion, doesn't she?
That's what she can do.
Yep, this isn't a question for me.
But would there be a game you would take? Or would you have something that you'd take with you?
Nah, probably not. I think I've now gotten so used to going on holiday and not playing games at all that it's not something I actively look to do when I go on holiday. So probably nothing. If ever I did, it would be something small. So it'd be like, I suppose the closest would be when I went to Leeds on a weekend trip with a friend to drink beer, basically. I bought a copy of Sea Salt and Paper and we played that every night while we were there.
Yeah,
and he bought his own copy, so that works really well. Mm. In an airport or on the plane, even you could play that. So something like Sea Salt and Paper would be the sort of thing I'd take probably. Stuff that's just you can stick in a pocket, you know, without having to worry too much about it. And it would have to be probably a two-player kind of friendly game. So don't know.
Yeah,
Seven Wonders Duel, that kind of thing, maybe. But she would never. Yeah, Megan will never, ever, ever play. Even if she was a game player, I don't think. Yeah, it's not a question for me. Something I've never considered, really.
No.
Yeah, that's fair.
Nick, you got lots of kids. That's why you had lots of kids to play games with, didn't you? Or was that just?
Indeed. Yeah, they all quite happily play. They would play. Quite happy for ages play Uno, they will play Sushi Go, Coloretto, Zooloretto, they would really like. A number of trick-taking games we bring with them, they'd happily play. And my wife doesn't really like playing games because I beat her too easily. But if we play something, then it would be something like Castles of Burgundy or Ticket to Ride. That's what we used to play, and Carcassonne, back when I wasn't quite so good playing games, and she had a chance of beating me.
That's cool. Nah. I mean, this time it was so hot. We went at the wrong time for Cyprus. It was just so hot that I was just sat there in the evening going, I can't even be bothered. I'm just like sweltering and trying to cool down.
Too hot to move.
Yeah.
It's a bad plan.
But anyway, topic number four, basically non-gaming things we've been getting up to quite recently. And I will start.
We've got to catch up on, haven't we? It's been a while.
We have. Basically, Clank Digital is out there in early access now on Steam. Me and Sam had beta access because we backed the Kickstarter. And I think we rinsed that as much as we could until they took it away. I don't know, have you brought the full version, Sam?
Not for £20.99, I'm not. No, I'm waiting for that to be significantly cheaper. We didn't even get a discount code or anything like that. A bit of a code, but nothing.
Yeah, I was slightly disappointed with that, but I still forked out on it because I then could play it while I was in Cyprus. It's a pretty good version. It teaches you some rules that you've been playing wrong for years, and quite enjoy it. I like I play it a lot of just like playing against a computer. They have challenge modes on there which can be quite tough to get through, And then they also have that some kind of heist mode, which is like a live kind of thing that's going on, a league of you play this setup and you got to basically score as many points as possible with the setup, and you go onto the league table and see how well you do. So yeah, it's pretty good. It's only the basic version at the minute. There's no expansions and that included. And most likely when they do bring out the expansion, it's going to cost more money. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. I quite like it. It scratches the itch.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very good implementation, I thought.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to not having to pay for a fortune for it.
I do like it if you're sat, the little dragon sits at the corner, and every time it, like a dragon attack, he spits out the cubes, and they basically land on top of the characters' heads to damage them. And if you don't take your turn for a while, he gets a bit grumpy and keeps roaring, kind of thing to remind you to take your turn. So
that's one thing I do actually hope in an update they give you the option to like turn off some of that stuff, because it slows down playing it quite a lot.
Does. Yeah, I did notice it glitches out sometimes because there's so much stuff going on. And also, I did notice a little glitch on it where, like, when the dragon attack comes up, you see your cubes get added in and then subtracted before they're revealed through the dragon. So it was just like, one time I try and hide that, but like I just sat there and it's like, oh, that's me dead then. That's four cubes just come out of the dragon before he's even spat it out. So I think they need to hide that a little bit better. But I have picked up a couple of glitches or bugs where it wasn't adding on like skill points. If you've like one card gave me an extra couple of skill points if I had an artifact, and it's quite good because it will show you on the card whether you've got the right requirements. It'd be green, but it actually didn't add the skill points on, even though it said it was green and I had an artifact. So I had to send them a bit of feedback saying, well, I've got this card, I've got this artifact, but I didn't get the +2 skill points, so it must be some kind of bug. So but yeah, that's the only kind of little cool things I've picked up out on it. So
yeah,
who wants to go next? So I need a rest. Get a drink.
I can go next. That's fine. So I have just finished watching on Netflix the series Wyatt Earp and the Cowboy War, which is a 6-episode, I want to say. 6-episode limited series, all about Wyatt Earp, and all about the cowboy gang, or effectively a mafia at the time. Very, very interesting. I didn't know very much at all about Wyatt Earp apart from the gunfight, the OK Corral, famously known. But it goes through his back history leading up to that gunfight, and then everything afterwards with the cowboy gang, all the legal battles and the fights and everything. Absolutely fascinating. It really was. One thing I didn't realise is that Wyatt Earp lived until the mid-1920s, and he was he ended up being a helping out accuracy on Western films that were being made in the late 20s, early 30s, which I didn't realize he was anywhere near that lived that long. Yeah. It was amazing stuff. But yeah, really well acted.
I'm definitely going to have a look at that because I quite like that story anyway. But one of my all-time favorite films is Tombstone, if you've ever watched that.
Yeah.
If you haven't, right, you definitely should, because that's fantastic. Mainly for Val Kilmer's depiction of Doc Holliday, but it's got a really good sort of summary bit at the end as well of like the kind of what happened after. You know,
yeah,
it sort of pans out, fades out to black kind of thing, and then it goes, you know, X, Y, Z, and whatnot. Sort of gives you the potted history, and yeah, fantastic. I like that setting as well.
It's really cool. It's a very good epic. Yeah, that part of Frontier America. Mm. Mm.
Yeah,
and they've done it. They produced it very well. So yeah,
excellent.
Good stuff. Yeah. That one.
Looking forward to seeing that.
Cool. Sam, what have you been doing?
I went to the cinema for the first time in ages on Thursday night and watched Alien Romulus, the latest in the Alien saga. Yeah, really good.
Cool.
So for quick potted history, it's set between Alien and Aliens, and it kind of follows a bit more of the Alien Isolation kind of vibe from the video game. So it's sort of set on a sort of research vessel that's been experienced difficulties, and I'm sure you can picture what the difficulties might have been. But yeah, so it's a whole new cast, complete, you know, to me at least, unknowns, but it sort of vibes on the same sort of, but it's very much got that cassette futurism vibe from Alien, where there's digital screens, but it's all very kind of green and black, sort of green screen sort of style stuff with proper big flashy buttons that you have to push and all that sort of stuff. And it's just very they've captured the universe of Alien really well from, you know, the aesthetic side of it and the kind of the low tech future kind of style thing, which is what I liked the most from it, really.
Yep.
In terms of loose story without going into spoilers, it follows this I'll be honest, I can't even remember the names of the characters, it's that bad. I'm going to have to sort of dig out the characters quickly because I can't for the life of me remember what they're called. But it follows this character called, I still can't remember what she's called. Rain. She's called Rain. Played by Kaylee Spaney, who I've never heard of, in honesty. And she is on a planet that is in perpetual night. It's a mining colony. Her parents died in this mining colony working for Weyland-Yutani. And she's done her time there, essentially, with her brother, inverted commas, called Andy, who is actually an android, but he's sort of a bit defective. So she sort of looks after him, and he's been tasked by her dad before he died to look after her, kind of thing. So it's kind of this kind of symbiotic kind of relationship going on. She's done her time with Weyland. She's now earned her credits to be able to get off planet, and she goes to the office to go, you can release me from my contract now because I've got there. And they screw her over and say, nah, actually, we're going to add another 12,000 hours to your contract, so you're going to have to stay here and go to the mines. Long story short, she manages to bunk off with some friends who happen to run a shuttle for Weyland-Yutani, and they run to this station where things have gone wrong, and I'm not going to say any more about it. But it's very good. The cast are really good. Very young cast, but works really well. The setting is really good. I've got a couple of quibbles with it, but I don't want to talk about it until, you know, it's a spoilery kind of set of things to do.
We've all seen it.
What happens?
Because we're all going to rush out and see it.
It will be once everyone's seen it, cool, and we're on the Discord, we can talk about it in detail. But there's a couple of things that sort of are a bit, it's not quite how I would have liked it. But overall, it does sit well. It's not as good as Alien or Aliens, but it's right there with Alien 3 territory. It's that kind of
That kind of level.
It's good. It's worth watching.
That's good. I've heard a lot of good stuff.
It's great to see it on a big screen. It's great to see it on a big screen. It's got all the jump scares you can expect and stuff. It was good fun.
Mm.
And the one thing that came out of it was thinking, I want more Alien movies, but I don't want them to necessarily have aliens in them, if that makes sense. I want more films based
more
in
that
universe, in that time setting as well, that Alien to Aliens, Weyland-Yutani screwing people, corporate bastardry, you know, people trying to, you know, cause this one kind of starts almost with like a heist kind of vibe to it, with the crew kind of off to do some stuff to try and make themselves you know, get out of this situation kind of stuff. And I want to see, if there weren't any aliens, what would have happened? Because that's the kind of world I want to spend time in.
You know?
I hope they kind of get that vibe from other people and get that feedback, because I'd love them to be brave enough to say, we're making a film in that universe that doesn't have to have aliens in it, because it's kind of been done now enough. The alien, the facehuggers, the everything, it's all been done. I can't see that they can be make things too surprising anymore. So I kind of want to just spend some time, do a Colonial Marines thing and have them putting down a, you know, revolution on a planet or something. I don't know. All those things. There's so many stories that could be told in that setting that would be quite interesting to see. But anyway, it's good.
Cool.
I'm going to check that out. I too have been to the cinema and watched the latest Marvel movie, which is basically a swan song to the Fox Marvel universe, and that was Deadpool and Wolverine. If you've seen Deadpool 1 and 2, yeah, you know what you're going to get. It is exactly the same thing. But this time he teams up with Wolverine. And, I mean, it's difficult how much to go into spoilers with this, because there was a lot of spoilers.
Yeah, because I've seen it as well. There are so many references and that it's hard to explain it fully, how Wolverine is there.
And I think the trailer misleads you, because you think this is going to be the answer to, like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe's kind of, like, undoings, like where they've gone wrong, and he's gonna, like, he says he's Marvel Jesus kind of thing. That's not the truth. And it is basically the swan song for Fox Marvel Universe.
Yep.
It's basically a lot of the characters from the Fox Universe coming together and kind of saying, yeah, goodbye. In it, and I mean, there's so much content on YouTube and other socials, I don't know how people cannot get away from it. So I didn't want it spoiled for myself, so I went really early. I think I pretty much, like, the Saturday after it came out. I would have gone sooner, but it was just work commitments and things like that. But yeah, I went as soon as possible as I could to go and see it with Claire. And she didn't enjoy the very first Deadpool movie. I don't know what it was. I loved it. I thought it was brilliant. Number two was okay. She didn't see that at all. And so she wasn't looking forward to seeing Deadpool. She was looking forward to seeing Hugh Jackman. And particularly Hugh Jackman.
You see plenty of Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, a little bit too much of Hugh Jackman at some point. and
he didn't work out for no reason.
She said, actually, she really enjoyed it. Not just because it had Hugh Jackman in it, but it was also, she said, it was actually a good Deadpool movie, and she got a lot of it. There was some things she didn't get, and there was one point where someone came in, and I literally kind of wet myself because I was just like, oh, they're in it, kind of thing. And she was like, what are you? what is wrong with you? I was like, oh, I'll explain at the end, kind of thing. And then, so yeah, it's just so much stuff in it. And it's just so funny. And it's just brilliant. And just, I think it was what also the fans wanted as well. And Ryan knew what the fans wanted. Ryan knew what he had to do with the movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they just got it all in there. And it's now become the highest achieving R-rated movie.
Yeah.
Of all time? Or was it just comics? Probably superhero, but anyway.
I would think definitely comics. Yeah,
I mean, it's reached a billion far. So, and I think Marvel's kind of rubbing their hands together and quite glad that they made the choice of going with it. So it's quite funny because there's one point, and it's in the trailers because they talk about, like, doing cocaine, and he's talking to Blind Al, and he's saying, Foggy actually stipulated we cannot use anything to do with cocaine. We're not allowed to mention it. And they start going through all the names. There's a whole list of what we're not allowed to use. They know all the slang words and things like that. And then there was like a YouTube, not a YouTube, there was a Twitter tweet from Marvel saying, thank you, Deadpool, and that, because you now like put us back on the track kind of thing. The movie's great, yeah. Blah, blah, blah. And then behind that note is the actual list and letter from Marvel saying, you cannot absolutely use anything related with cocaine and all the names that go with it. So what they actually got was an actual letter from them saying, you can't do this. And they fit it in as a joke in the movie. So it's just brilliant.
Yeah, that's the level of humor. And it's brilliant. It's really, really good.
So yeah, if you haven't seen it, you should see it. I think it's funny. And if you've watched all...
If you like Deadpool, or if you like more Marvel of any kind.
Yeah.
It references so much of the Marvel universe.
Definitely. And this actually could change Marvel's thought process and movie progress in the future, because it's done so well and because they had certain cameos, they've actually considering changing their approach, because they didn't realise actually how much fans want things and want do things and how good a reaction it had. So yeah, I'm hoping it. Yeah, it's a good movie. I actually loved it. I'm actually planning to go and see it again, just to have another laugh.
Yeah.
So. And the dog.
Very cool.
And the dog's brilliant.
Oh, cute, ugly dog. Oh, so good.
Oh dear. So yeah, Sam's quiet, so he hates Marvel.
So. No, I'm keeping quiet because I want to watch it. I don't want to hear anything about it.
All right, that's good. Maybe we have a.
I don't think we've given anything away.
No, I think
we've been very good.
I've seen all those clips of. I know half the things. I see headlines saying, and X's cameo, details of X's cameo, and oh man. So I know the ones that are going to show up.
Yeah, that's
cool.
That's exactly why I wanted to go as soon as possible. Is go, it's not be spoiled by things like that. So, maybe we have a spoiler episode chat about it once Sam's seen it.
Yeah. That'd be cool. Yeah.
And once you guys have seen Alien Romulus, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
I'll
do
that.
Yeah. It's got to be done.
So.
Cool. Next on my list. I can do these two back to back because they are both Star Trek related. So the first one is a YouTube channel which kind of found recently. It's a redoing of a previous one that they're doing. This is called the Decon Chamber. So there's the two Star Trek actors from Star Trek Enterprise, Dominic Keating and Connor Trinneer. They were on the Star Trek Enterprise series. They are doing kind of a YouTube series where they interview various cast and crew from various worlds of Star Trek, and just chat to them about their acting and about their lives, and it's fascinating stuff. They started this season off with William Shatner. They have most recently they did one with Scott Bakula, obviously played their captain, and in their previous series that they did when it was called The Shuttle Pod Show, I don't know why they changed over. I think something happened with something there. But they had two seasons of various other stars, Jonathan Frakes and many, many other people that they interview. And yeah, it's fascinating to listen to the history and what people remember about all the shows. So yeah, if you like Star Trek stuff, then that's well worth watching some of that. I kind of have it on in the background at work a lot, just listen along, it's good stuff. And the other Star Trek thing is Star Trek Prodigy, which is the animated Nickelodeon Star Trek show. Season 2 came out a month or two ago. Really, really good. The first series took a little while to get into it because it was quite cartoony and jokey. But once they started introducing certain characters from Star Trek, from the rest of Star Trek, coming in as guest voices, it started getting really, really good. And then season 2 has just added more and more kind of old Star Trek cast members coming back to reprise their roles as the voice actors. Absolutely brilliant. And then it I won't say how it ends, but the ending leads into some of the other Star Trek series really, really cleverly, and it's just brilliant how it does that. So yeah, if you like Star Trek stuff, then that is well worth watching if you don't mind watching animated stuff.
Yeah, all right. Put that on my subscribe list.
Give it a few episodes of the season one to get over the weirdness of some of the characters, the playfulness of some of the characters. You get used to them.
My last bit can be also comboed up a little bit. First up is ages ago, I talked about probably about 2 years ago now. I talked about I was considering getting either a Nintendo Switch or I was saying I was intending gonna get a Nintendo Switch, and Dr. Lewis suggested, forget that, get a Steam Deck instead, it's better. And I went, no, I think I'm gonna stick with the Switch. And he was right, I should have got the Steam Deck. I subsequently bought a Steam Deck after having
Don't tell
ordered
him
my
that,
Switch.
it gave him a big head.
I know. But you know, it's credit where it's due, it was correct. So yeah, I did go and get myself a Steam Deck. I got it in time for when I went on holiday to Gran Canaria, back in was it May or June? I can't remember when it was, earlier in the year. Because I thought, oh, screw it, if I'm going to get one, I want to get one and use it on the plane, basically. Which I did, because I was playing Clank Digital on that on the plane all the way over, and most of the time I was there, and Worms and various other things. But yeah, so Steam Deck, for those that don't know, is a handheld computer basically with a screen. So imagine an Atari Lynx kind of thing, or a Sega Game Gear. It's that kind of affair. But it's very good. I'm quite surprised. The only thing I've had from a downside is I did buy Mass Effect Andromeda, which I thought, ah, oh, quite fancy giving that a go again, and it was in a sale in August, so I got it for like, I don't know, £6 or whatever it was, and it's I've got a dock to plug it into the TV as well, so I can basically play on the TV, and I've got a Bluetooth controller, so I can play, like it's a console essentially, and the resolution was just really poor, but that was down to the game, not the Steam Deck itself. So I had to get that refunded. I just basically text was illegible, and it was so dark and contrasty, I couldn't see a thing. So that's the only downside I've had with it so far. And yeah, it's very good. But the next bit is I'm also replaying Dredge, the video game Dredge, because I found out that there's a bunch of extra expansions that have been released since I finished it last year. And because I've backed Deep Regrets on Kickstarter, and that kind of got me thinking about it again, I was like, yep, okay, time to play it again. Ironically, I'm not playing that on my Steam Deck because I already bought the game on Xbox, so I just put it all in there and playing on Xbox instead. But very much enjoying playing Dredge again, picking up, fishing weird fish and having my boat killed by giant monsters. So yeah, cool. Yeah. It's a very good game. And subsequently to that, actually, as a third part, there's a YouTube channel called NoClip. I don't know if anyone's interested in how video, the behind the scenes story of video game production. There's a YouTube channel called NoClip, no spaces in NoClip, NoClip, and they make really, really good video game documentaries about the sort of studios that make games and how they made certain games and stuff. They had a big series on The Witcher 3, or The Witcher series as a whole, really, but The Witcher 3 in particular. Did one on Fallout and the whole thing behind Fallout and Bethesda Game Studios. And they've also done one now on Dredge, and I didn't realise that the developer of Dredge was this tiny little outfit, new outfit in New Zealand. And the story of how they got published and stuff was really cool. So, well worth watch as well.
Very awesome.
cool.
I still need to play that.
Yeah, it's good.
Trouble is that the prices are quite high actually on it, so I've thought, I'm not buying that yet.
I'll tell you about £15. Come on, man.
You said the same about Clank, so you can't really complain.
Well, true, but I'm playing a game I've played 100 times already and paying £20 for it, whereas Dredge is a bit different. Anyway, whatever. Pauses for courses. Yeah, it's good though. If get it on your wish list, and if it goes on sale, definitely.
Yeah, it is on there. Definitely, is on my wish list, and I'll just wait. Yeah, see if it does come down in price at one point. But I thought it was quite expensive on the Xbox because I looked it up on that and it was like, whoa, I think that was like 25 quid. I was like, ah, forget that. So, but anyway, so that is another podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you enjoyed our third topic, tapas. And yeah, if you join the Discord, you'll be able to join in with the next one. I am just trying to find the outro because I didn't paste it. Right, so yeah, thank you for listening to the podcast. I hope you enjoyed the episode. As always, you can join in with any of the comments, feedback, and constructive criticism you want to give us on what we've been talking about in our Discord, email, X, Facebook, and all the other social media sites you can find us on, as well as joining in with our BGA games that we're playing. So, yeah, I'd like to thank Nick and Sam for doing this podcast, and they can say goodbye now.
Goodbye now.
Goodbye now.
Goodbye from me. Bye, everyone.